But if you don't know what's there foundationally, you're kind of, you can get to that situation where you're chasing your tail a bit.
Or you're relying on what, you know, three different experts saying four different things.
Yes.
Which one do you follow? And so this is really hoping to empower our readers to become their own expert.
Hi, everyone. It's Judy Warner. Welcome back to another On Track podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. Well, we have one of your favorite backs today, Dr. Eric Bogatin, who has come out with a new book that I thought you'd want to know about, and then another one that he published, I believe, last year. So he's here to tell us about that and just update us on what he's been up to. So lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media.
Hi, Eric. Thanks so much for joining us again. It's been a long time and it's good to see you.
Hey, Judy. Always a pleasure to be on your podcast.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to have you. So I was talking to the fine folks at Artech House, which is a technical book publishing house out of Boston, and they were telling me that you've got a new book out. But before we start getting into all that, I want to know what's up with the amazing background. You have this nebula, like, what's the story? You always have the best backgrounds.
Yeah. So this one here, this is one of Hubble's greatest hits. This is actually a supernova remnant. It was, I think there've been about three or four supernovas that have been visible from the Earth in recorded time. This one happened 1055 AD. Recorded by the Chinese and also by the American Indians. And it appeared as a bright star during the day. It was so bright. And so after it exploded, it left behind a neutron star. You can't see it, but it's in the very center there. And that neutron star is pulsing away at 33 times a second or so, and is a really spectacular structure to observe. And so this is the Crab Nebula, and it's one of the 110 objects that Charles Messier discovered in the late 1800s.
It's amazing that we've been observing things in the sky for that long.
You know, the sky, especially, you know, the lunar cycles and sun cycles tied to the seasons, it has been, ever since we started agriculture, the seasons have been an important part of human culture. And so it's just evolved over time. In Charles Messier's time, comets were really a really big thing. They were, you know, wanderers in the solar, they're transient objects. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of mystical connotation. And there was quite a thing to be a comet hunter, to look for comets and be the first one to discover it. And Charles Messier was one of the most fervent comet hunters. He had a small little 4-inch telescope and would scan the sky looking for a little fuzzy object that moved across the sky. And he found all of these fuzzy little objects, but they didn't move. And so he started making a recording and a listing of them. He said, "Don't go here. There's nothing to see. It's not a comet. Ignore this fuzzy little dot in the sky. Go look for another one that's moving." And he recorded 110 of these fuzzy objects. They're called Messier objects, and they have turned out to be the most interesting objects in the sky. Even though they don't move, they are all either galaxies, nebula, or in this case, supernova remnants, planetary nebula, and they all, as amateur astronomers, they are the very first thing you want to go look at because they're so interesting. And it turns out they were in the discard bin of Charles Messier, saying, "Nothing to see here, just move on to something else where you might see a real
comet."
That's
so great. And yeah, so that photo is from the Hubble.
This is a Hubble shot, yeah.
That is spectacular.
Yeah. So I always like to have a theme with my, we do Zoom at CU with my students, and I always like to have a theme. Last semester was 1950s science fiction posters.
Yes.
And the last theme I've been using is Hubble's Greatest Hits.
Well, it makes for awesome background. I love it. And a good conversation piece, right?
Yeah, they are the most interesting, the messy objects, most interesting objects in the sky. And they all tell a story. They all tell us something about stellar evolution and about how astrophysics works. So that makes them even, you know, beautiful to look at and having a compelling physics story behind them as well.
So for our listeners, if you don't know Dr. Eric Bogatin or you live under a rock, he does have a PhD in physics, right? That's
yep.
your PhD is in physics. And
worked in my thesis was in cosmology. And so,
I don't know that I knew that about you.
Yeah. Yeah. I did desktop cosmology experiments. And so I've always been interested in astrophysics and cosmology, and you can't make money at it, but you can have a lot of fun with it.
Well, you've also, of course, are a professor, full-time professor now at CU Boulder, the Colorado University of Boulder, and you're teaching, you're really equipping young engineers to do amazing things from, and very practically, right, in a real-world scenario, but you can do all the math to behind it, which is really impressive, and then you're always fun to listen to, so... that's why you've been so popular with the Altium community. So, okay. So let's talk about your book. So right along those lines, you have two books that came out, from RTEC. One, I think we talked about last year. I'm going to pull up the titles because you have a habit of having these long titles that Judy struggles with, but they're great.
Yeah. The title is the first chapter of the book, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so the first one that we talked about, I think last year, was Bogatin's Practical Guide to Transmission Line Design and Characterization for Signal Integrity Applications. Chapter two. So tell us, give our audience a refresher on that book, and then we'll talk about the latest one that's on pre-order now.
So I've been working with RTEC for a number of years, and we decided on a series of books, all with the starting title of Bogatin's Practical Guide to something. And so the first one in the series is what I think is really at the foundation of all signal integrity, and that is transmission line structures. And so I wrote this book, and the other key feature working with RTEC and why I went to RTEC is I wanted these to be multimedia. And so, yeah, you can get the original idea was to come out with just the soft copy because I have embedded videos. So throughout the book, there are places where I thought, hey, this would be really good to explain this in person or to show a measurement or how to use a tool. And so we have video recordings that are, you know, typically 2 to 5 minutes long each, sprinkled throughout the book. And so in the soft copy, it's a link. You just click on it and then the video appears and you play. You have to be obviously online and it appears. There was so much, and the idea was, it's just gonna be a soft copy, that's all, because it's multimedia. And there was so much interest, mostly from us old guys, old folks, to have a hard copy book that RTEC went ahead and they did a print version of it. And so obviously in the print version, there's nothing to click on,
right.
So you can't see the video, but you can hold that book in your hand as a hard copy. So there's the hard copy and then the print version, and then you can get a bundle from RTEC. So you get both of them, the best of both worlds.
Oh, there you go. So you can access, and on the print version, Eric, does it give you the URL so you could manually look it up, or how do they bridge that?
Yeah, the way you bridge that is you get the bundle and then you can have the soft copy.
See.
Click on the soft copy.
Okay, well, that's easy though, that you could just click the link. So
yeah, and I really wrote it with the intent that this is the first in our series that everything about signal integrity, almost everything about signal integrity, it involves transmission lines and the concepts. And it's something that if it's taught at all in schools, it's taught from an RF perspective, and you get this long, you know, had to solve a differential equation to end up with, you know, with this parameter of the impedance looking in the front of the transmission line based on the characteristic impedance of the line and the tangent of the length and angle. And it's really complicated, hard to understand, applies to the frequency domain. And there's nothing about it that a signal integrity engineer can use. And so where this topic is taught in a lot of schools, you walk away without a whole lot of understanding of, okay, what's the transmission line? And I literally, I teach some signal integrity classes here at CU, and we have a very extensive RF curriculum. I get students that have gone through the RF program, the graduate students, and the very first day, you know, I ask them, what's the transmission line? They can't tell me what a transmission line is. And so we wrote this book really as the foundation building book about how to think about transmission lines and how signals propagate on transmission lines, what the important properties are, and knowing that, how do we engineer, how do we design the transmission lines for the properties that we want? And then how do you measure them? And so there's quite a lot about using a TDR and interpreting the results and about single-ended and differential transmission lines as well. So it's like, you know, the title says, it's a very practical guide to understanding what I think is the principles, the design, best design practices, best simulation practices, best measurement practices for transmission lines.
Well, one thing that I think most people appreciate about you is that you do just that. And I like that the series starts out with a practical guide too, right? Because you can get so theoretical, it's not accessible. Right. And even for people like me that aren't engineering students, I can sit in one of your classes and glean and at least understand the concepts and the principles of what you're describing. And I know for your students, it's like immediate application. They have something tangible that they can apply. So I think this is really important work. And so I'm so glad you do it. And I think it's a real benefit. And I really love that idea of doing the multimedia. That is such kind of a modern way. And there are things that we're just are so much more, they're so much better illustrated, right? Like when you're probing something or whatever, if you can to sort of conceptually take that abstract idea and just be able to watch you do it, I think really adds a nice layer of practicality, right? Okay, so RTEC had reached out to me and they said a new book's coming out and you've shared with me, it's not quite out, but it's ready for pre-order. And that is called Boganin's Practical Guide to Prototype Breadboard and PCB Design. So tell us about this new book and why you decided to tackle this subject matter.
So, you know, most of the classes that I've been teaching over the last 30 years have been signal integrity, power integrity related, very, you know, starting with the you know, high performance systems and applications. And since I've joined the faculty here at CU, I think it's about 5 or 6 years ago, I started teaching a class on printed circuit board design, but really the kind of the precursor to when you're designing transmission lines, because so many of the products, the examples that we build here, the students build in their projects aren't really high speed. They're, you know, on the 50 megahertz and below kind of thing, small boards. So transmission lines isn't the most important topic for them, but there are a lot of other really important issues in designing circuit boards that I've incorporated in this class about how do you do circuit design? How do you read a schematic? How do you identify what components to use? When you do a search for a resistor, there are a million different resistors. How do you choose that one in the million to use? How do you take advantage of a reference design, but make it your own? Because there are too many reference designs that are out there that are wrong or misleading or don't use the best design practice. So the class that I put together, it started out as how to design circuit boards using Altium. But I found that even before you're laying out the board and you're connecting, doing the connectivity, you really have to understand circuits and how to read schematics and how to create schematics, how to identify the parts, how to think about risk management at the beginning of the project so that you can have a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. And you know, since we, before COVID, we were very hands-on, it was about soldering. And, you know, these kids here that, you know, we get historically that have been coming through, they don't know what solder flux is. And when you're doing, especially lead-free, and you don't use solder flux, you make terrible solder joints.
Yeah.
And I see these kids, I used to see these kids anyway, try to solder wires together with lead-free solder, and they would turn the soldering up to, you know, 800 degrees Fahrenheit, as hot as they get, because they weren't able to make good solder joints, thinking, oh, it's not hot enough. I get it. And they didn't know about tin oxide and about solder flux. So I incorporated in this class a lot of the details, the practical aspects of what does it take to successfully build a prototype as a printed circuit board. And the step to get there, I strongly recommend that wherever possible, you build it as a solderless, or at least parts of it, as solderless breadboard. So you can do it quickly, you can iterate, you can play around, you can change components, you get a feel for how the circuit behaves. And so this course has evolved over the years, and I wrote the textbook based on the course that starts out from the very basics of what do you have to worry about when you build a prototype to increase your chance of first-time success. And along the way, I realized that, okay, if, you know, a circuit board and a solderless breadboard, we usually think of designing it for connectivity. It is to provide the connections between all the terminals of the components, right? And that's the most important starting place. And if your product is at a low enough data rate or low enough clock frequency or long enough rise times, the interconnects are transparent. They're not going to play a role. That you can do it anyway. You can have wires going all over the place. It'll work. But when you reach the point where you've got rise times that are in the microsecond or less, or tens of megahertz kind of clock frequencies, the interconnects aren't transparent anymore. And it's not that they behave like transmission lines, but they have predominantly inductance and mutual inductance. And you have to think about those properties of the interconnects when you do the physical layout, the physical implementation of the interconnects. And so in my class and in this textbook, the new textbook, one of the important focuses is about, okay, once you've got connectivity established, then it's all about noise. And the two most important noise sources are all related to switching noise. They are the first things that is going to break a system. Switching noise from IOs that are switching and crosstalk between the IOs, and switching noise in the power rail. And so maybe a third of the book is really an introduction to the signal integrity of switching noise. It's how do you think about it? Where does it come from? And most importantly, how do you fix the problem? How do you design it out for signal routing and for the power distribution? And, you know, a large part of the section in the power distribution is about what do decoupling capacitors really do, and what is the problem you're trying to solve with them, and what is the most important design feature in their implementation. And it's all taken from the examples I use in my textbook, or in the class that I teach, we've incorporated in the textbook. We've developed a number of specialized circuit boards in the class that illustrate some of these principles really well, and I show examples of them in the textbook. So it's really a precursor to the first book on transmission lines. This is how to think about getting beyond connectivity. And what are, you know, these two problems of switching noise, you know, switching noise between signal lines, sometimes we call it ground bounce. That's a very large part of it. And then power rail noise. And so it's really a practical guide to how do you design circuit boards for and solderless breadboards for connectivity, and then how do you engineer them to minimize switching noise? So that
sounds that sounds amazing. And so, at least in your mind, if you've been teaching these classes, it sounds like this sort of lays the foundation of understanding really practically what's happening. So when you go into sort of the higher speeds, at least you know what you're looking at. you know, or where to know to look for the problems, or having
what the problems are.
Yeah,
and, what the problems are, and how to get around them.
Right. So it sounds very foundational to me.
It is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I try to avoid is I don't like just throwing out rules. Do this, do that. I think it's more important to provide some understanding of the fundamental principles so that anybody can understand where those rules come from. And, you know, so much of engineering is a trade-off. And while it's important mm-hmm. to, you know, follow the best design practices, sometimes they conflict with each other, or sometimes it's too expensive, and you have to be able to do the trade-offs. And to do that, you need to understand the where these rules come from and what their origin is.
Right.
So we try to provide that foundation, like you said, as well as how it motivates these design guidelines, and also some design guidelines that I think are wrong, that are popular in the industry, that don't provide any value and that you shouldn't follow. So we include that as well in the textbook.
Well, and you know, we've talked about this before, but I think that when you know what those principles are, you know when you can bend or break them, or like
yes.
what those consequences might be. But if you don't know what's there foundationally, you're kind of, you can get to that situation where you're chasing your tail a bit.
Or you're relying on what, you know, three different experts saying four different things.
Yes.
Which one do you follow?
And, yeah.
And so this is really hoping to empower our readers to become their own expert.
Well, I love it. And I love that you're putting good material out there, because as you said, there's some bad ideas that if you're a student, well, you grew up with the internet and you're just going to Google it, and whatever Google search may or may not be, you know, with any research you do, what you pulling off the internet may or may not be good. And so I like that you sort of have this solid. Now, does this one also have multimedia in it, or is it straight text?
Yeah. So it's the same kind of thing. We have embedded videos. I have a lot of examples of, you know, some of these boards that I show the results from. I actually bring you into my lab. I've got a little video camera. We're looking at the board, looking at the scope measurement, and I'm pointing out how some of the physical features affect the measurement that we see. I make some changes in the circuit, and you can see in real time how that affects the measurement that we do. So it's like you said earlier, there are some things that just come across so much better visually and yes. you know, with that, you know, with that video. Mm-hmm. And so we try to incorporate that wherever possible in the along the textbook as well.
I love that. I think that's a really impactful way to teach, especially these days. And I think for younger people, particularly, they, you know, they learn almost everything on, you know, platforms like YouTube. So I think that actually helps them with their attention span and engaging them and holding them there, right? As well as their passion for engineering, which is usually a ever-present thing. So for our listeners, I'm going to put those links to Eric's books below in the show notes, so you can go check those out. The second one, the prototype, Bogdan's Practical Guide to Prototype Breadboard and PCB Design, is for pre-order only. Eric is still fixing his...
Still putting in
his commas,
adding the comments and commas, and changing the witches to that's.
Yes. So I have the same problem. Luckily, I have a copy editor that fixes all my commas. I am a comma violator.
Yeah, me too.
So
now, before we leave these two books, I actually have a request of your viewers.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're going to do some more books with RTEC and more of these multimedia books. And we got these two planned. We have a list of other books that we're going to do, but I'm not sure what the next one's going to be. And so I'm open to suggestions. One of them is a book that compiles all my rules of thumb and little descriptions of each of them and how they're used. Okay. Another option is a book on hacking interconnects using S parameters. And because I've done a lot of webinars on S parameters and how to read S parameters like a book, and how to turn S parameters into circuit models by, I call that hacking and matching measurement and simulation of S parameters. So that'd be another one. And then there's another one maybe on how to use an oscilloscope. So kind of like a handbook for professionals using oscilloscopes. So those are some of the candidate books that I have
okay.
in the list. Not sure which one I want to do next, and would love to get input from some of your viewers. Maybe they have another suggestion for another textbook that they'd like me to pursue next. So let me know. We'll decide in the next month or so.
Okay. So you guys can do that by commenting on YouTube. I'll put the three titles in there. And speaking of YouTube, Eric is going to talk about something in a minute where we're going to show a video. If you're driving in your car, don't stop and look at the video, okay? But if you have a chance when you get home or get to your office, you're going to want to check out the video. And when you do that, go to the comments. You know, we'll put up those three titles for you, and then you can vote on them. And then I can give that feedback to Eric, and you can have a vote on what he comes out with next. So
that'd be great.
Okay. So Eric, we should also mention that you are still the dean of Signal Integrity, right?
Academy. Right.
On the Teledyne LaCroix website. We'll share that. And for our listeners, there's years of content that Eric has put out on multiple subjects and just so much good information there. So we'll make sure we put a link to that. And then also in your spare time, because you're not too busy doing astronomy, publishing books, teaching students, you also are the editor of Signal Integrity Journal magazine.
Technical editor. Yeah.
So I also want to give a shout out to Signal Integrity Journal. We'll put the link below on that so you guys can go subscribe to their publication. Some of the people that I respect the most in this industry are all Eric's buddies and friends, and they're all contributors there. So it's really good, solid content. Now I have to make a confession, Eric, and here comes the YouTube part. So before we record our podcast today, something came up in my email box and it mentioned, you know, Signal Integrity Journal, and I opened it up and there was an article you had written about the turbo encapsulator. And I always feel like the not smartest person in the room when I talk to people like you, but honestly, some of these terms, and I've been around for, you know, 25, 30 years in this industry, I had never heard. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that article? And then I know there's a video that you want to share with our audience.
Sure. Yeah. So this is a classic story that every engineer should be aware of. And I first learned about, 20 years ago or so. And there's been a series of videos that have been made about this new widget. It started out as the encabulator and then became the turbo encabulator and then the retro turbo encabulator. And then most recent version that Dan Bogdanoff at Keysight came out with was the electro turbo encabulator. It is a classic story of engineering excellence. I like to show this to my students as an example of how you can see almost anything on the web, but you have to, you know, as you said earlier, Judy, you have to apply your own critical reasoning mm-hmm. and critical analysis to it. So you can't believe everything you see on the web. Absolutely. And so I don't want to say too much more about it, but I will mention that. So I wrote an article about it because I think after Dan came out with his little video about the electro turbo encabulator, I thought that it was very timely to get more visibility on this widget so that more engineers are aware of it. And there's a series of videos I link in the article on the SI Journal that I recommend everybody check out. I go talk about a little bit of the history of the encabulator, and I have links to the videos. And there's one video that I want to play for you guys that was done by Rockwell Automation. Excellent video that describes the, I think this is the retro encabulator, really, really well. So shall I go ahead and share my screen and we'll look at the video?
Yeah, sure. Arnaud, okay. Are you going to show the article first or are you going to go right into the video?
Yeah, I'll show the article. So I'm going to share my screen here. So okay. Here's Signal Integrity Journal. If you haven't been there, you should definitely visit. Everything is completely free and accessible. We're peer reviewed. I'm the technical editor. I work with a really esteemed group of experts in the industry on our editorial advisory board. We review all the articles. So a lot of content. We've been doing this for over 4 years. I think it's 5 years now. Yeah. So we've got a ton of content on here. It's all archived. It's all searchable. So definitely check it out. And then, you know, I do articles, you know, once a month or so, or blogs. So here's the piece that I did just last month. Your next must-have widget, the Electro Turbo Encabulator. And so, yeah, I go through some of the history of it and some of my involvement in it. And then here is the link to one of the videos about the encabulator. So I'm going to open this up. Here's okay. YouTube. So here we'll play it. I'm just going to sit back. It's only 2 minutes long. Here we go.
Here at Rockwell Automation's world headquarters, research has been proceeding to develop a line of automation products that establishes new standards for quality, technological leadership, and operating excellence. With customer success as our primary focus, work has been proceeding on the crudely conceived idea of an instrument that would not only provide inverse reactive current for use in unilateral phase detractors, but would also be capable of automatically synchronizing cardinal gram meters. Such an instrument comprised of Dodge gears and bearings, Reliance electric motors, Allen Bradley controls, and all monitored by Rockwell software is Rockwell Automation's Retro Encabulator. Now basically, the only new principle involved is that instead of power being generated by the relative motion of conductors and fluxes, it's produced by the modal interaction of magnetoreluctance and capacitive directance. The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings ran a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of 6 hydrocoptic marsal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal Lotus O deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator. Every 7th conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters. Moreover, whenever fluorescent score motion is required, it may also be employed in conjunction with a drawn reciprocation dingle arm to reduce sinusoidal depleneration. The retro encabulator has now reached a high level of development, and it's being successfully used in the operation of Milford Trunnions. It's available soon wherever Rockwell Automation products are sold.
Okay, so this is just a small example. I think it's a classic every engineer should view. And I wish I could perform as well with so many words with such a straight face as those presenters. They are my heroes.
Well, I think your next book needs to be a glossary of terms for the turbo encabulator so we can decipher that highly technical content. And thank God you're the technical editor, you know, weeding out all the garbage so we really know what's going on.
That's right. We spend a lot of time curating and only give you the top shelf stuff out there.
That's top shelf. Well, boy, did I learn a lot today. I wondered what a turbo encabulator was.
And now you know.
I know. I can use that now. Yeah. Well, thank you, Eric, so much for joining us and sharing your outstanding content with our audience and always being such a fun person to talk to and sharing such good resources with the whole engineering community and helping all the young ones at CU Boulder be really equipped for the industry, you know, and not just going out with a head full of theory and not knowing how to apply those things. So thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, always a pleasure, Judy.
Well, I want to tell you, our audience, about two more things, Eric, before I let you go. One is the OnTrack team, we went ahead and we launched an Amazon On Track Design Community Book Club, a virtual book club. And the first book we're going to put in there is one of Eric Bogatin's. And so what we'll do is we'll take books that we know are solid, and we will put those in that basically book club for you. I'll share the link below in the show notes. So come over and join, make suggestions of books, and let's put good solid content in there. And it'll be a good place to share information and kind of vet the good stuff from people like Eric Bogatin, Rick Hartley, and others, and put some good reliable resources in there for you. So I hope you'll go over and click through and join our On Track book club. And lastly, we are in conversations. A lot of you have been asking about Altium Live. By the time this podcast goes out, we will be announcing that Altium Live is back in person and virtual at the end of January. So I'll put the press release in the show notes below. And we haven't yet opened registration, but there'll be some basic information there so you can save the date. So Eric, thanks again. We'll continue to talk, and we hope to have you to Altium Live and share some of your engineering. You can do a turbo and cabular demo. That's what we're going to do.
We'll start working on the floor model right now.
Okay. All right. You get back to us on that one. All right. Well, thank you again for joining us, Eric.
Hey, great chatting with you, Judy.
You bye-bye. Too. And thanks to our listeners. We look forward to being with you next week. Make sure you check out the show notes, subscribe, tell Eric about those book titles so he knows which one to serve up at RTech. And we'll see you next week. Until then, remember to stay healthy, stay safe, and always remember to stay on track.